announcing the commencement of the annual purge.
Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that is all about talking about movies. And episode 23, that's crazy. They just informed me that, you know, like, 52 would be a full, like, year of episodes. We've kind of been doing this show for half a year, and it's really blowing my mind right now. So, okay, before we jump into our movies this week, which are The Congress, Sex Tape, and The Purge Anarchy, I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Hahn.
Hi, guys.
Angie, do you want to say hi so it'll cut to you?
Yes. Hello, I'm Angie. I am not Ed Douglas.
Please let that be a running joke, please.
Oh, God. That's a good beginning. What are we starting with?
Sex Do you want to add to that?
Yeah. No. Let's just... We can all go around and say who we're not if you like.
I'm not Jeff Goldblum.
Oh. We're always disappointed about that too, Christy.
Me too.
I'm not Dewey the Cat. All right, let's do it. First one up, Sex Tape. Angie, you have got this one.
Okay, so Sex Tape is the new movie by Jake Kasdan, who directed Bad Teacher. And like Bad Teacher, it stars Cameron Diaz and Jason Segel. And this time they play a married couple named Annie and Jay, who they've been together since college. So they've been married for about 10 years. They have kids, or I guess it's about 10 years, right? They have kids now and everything. And, you know, as happens all the time, the sex and the sizzle just isn't quite there anymore. Like, they still really like each other, but they're not having as much sex. So one night, in an attempt to spice things up, they decide to record a sex tape, specifically a 3-hour sex tape of them doing every single position in The Joy of Sex. And then because modern technology and the cloud and whatnot, it accidentally gets uploaded to every single, like, iPad that Jay owns, which for reasons they don't really go into, is a lot of iPads that he's, like, distributed to, like, everyone he knows. So they spend the rest of the movie basically trying to, like, running around town trying to, like, collect the iPad, delete the video, et cetera, et cetera. So what I liked about this movie, it's not, I mean, I'll be honest, it's not, like, the funniest movie I've ever seen, but what I really liked about it was that I thought Cameron Diaz and Jason Segel have really good chemistry, and it was a movie where the two of them actually seemed to really like each other, which is rarer than you would think for a movie like this. Like, you know, when I was watching the movie, I was thinking of the film This Is 40, which in some ways deals with similar themes of, like, you know, they used to be a couple that's hot for each other, and now they're, like, their marriage is a little bit, like, getting a little bit stale. But in that movie, it always seemed like those people fucking hated each other. So it was nice to see them like each other. And the other thing I liked about this movie is that it's way more sex positive than I would have expected. I feel like a lot of these kind of, like, raunchy, like, super raunchy comedies, this isn't one of the raunchiest or anything, but a lot of these, like, R-rated comedy type things, like, you know, they joke about sex a lot, but it's in, like, a way where it comes from a place of, I guess, immaturity or even, like, some negativity, or, like, you know, sex is used as, like, a weapon, or it's, like, something that's
a gross out tool.
Yeah, or, like, it's, like, a conquest or something like that. In this one, sex is treated as, like, an important but not, like, all-encompassing part of their relationship.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And it's something that both genders are represented as wanting in the movie, which I really like seeing because, yeah, like, you know, an example that Angie and I talked about after the screening is that their characters' names are Jay and...
Annie.
And their, like, best friends are played by Rob Corddry and Ellie Kemper, and they see the tape, which I'm not giving away anything because they refer to it in the trailers, but both of them are excited about watching this tape with their friends. It's not just, like, Rob Corddry's this weird lone perv that's trying to hide this sex tape from his wife. Like, both of them are actively interested in this sex tape, and it's the same thing with Angie and Jay making it. They're both engaged
in
it. It's not...
You mean Annie.
Annie and Jay. Whoops! And she does not have a sex tape with Jason Segel.
No, I don't. Oh, my God, I'm so bad at winking. I can't do it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to anyone who had to see that. That was so sad.
I said that, but I laughed.
I'm going to screen grab that. It's got to be there. Like, a frame has to be there.
Your whole body leaned in, and then the wink was like... Which is funny, because actually Cameron Diaz has a really awkward wink in this movie, so that all worked, all of it.
Oh, you brought it back around. I like it. Good job.
But I mean, I agree with you. I thought this, I know this movie's getting, it's getting a really terrible reviews on
it's
Rotten
Tomatoes. It's getting slammed by critics. I think it has like a, the last time I checked, it had like a 19% on Rotten Tomatoes or something.
Ouch. Yeah. And it's like, I expected bad things because the reviews were so low. But the thing is, like, it was really funny. I had a really good time watching it. And like Angie said, like, this is a couple that likes each other and it made it so much fun to watch. And the film has actually got a really good message about relationships, and it's not just sex specific. It's about, the core of the movie is about how these two really like each other, and don't, it's not just love, it's not just that they still lust after each other, all those things play a part, but they still like each other as partners, and like that was very sweet to watch. And there's one which I'm not going to get super into, but there's like a big kind of after school special moment where they learn their lesson, and it all kind of gets hammered home, and it's like dirty and it's funny and it's touching and it's surprising. I really liked it. I wrote about it on Cinema Blend today of like what this movie gets right about marriage, and I'm really happy with that aspect of the movie. So like, yeah, there's, I mean, the things about the cloud are dumb, and like, you
know,
watching...
say, what about the whole cloud thing? Because when I was watching the trailer for this, I'm like, haha, that's funny that it accidentally gets uploaded to the cloud, but can that sustain a whole movie?
Well, Apple has actually, Apple has already come out and been like, guys, don't worry, that is not a thing that happens. You can film all the sex tapes on your iPads that you want. I might be paraphrasing. And
that
so
was
admittedly,
their, that was their
And
keep
so
using your iPads
like,
to film your sex.
Yes. Admittedly, it's kind of like a dumb plot point. And like, yes, to the movie's credit, there
that.
Is a point where they kind of admit like why that's kind of dumb. And the character, anyway.
And the plot takes on kind of a new angle. So yeah, the plot itself is kind of silly. But I didn't really care because it was so much fun. Like, another great thing, like, I genuinely like Jason Segel and Cameron Diaz together in this movie because they have a lot of fun. They made the sex scenes funny and not exactly sexy. Like, Cameron Diaz is very sexy, but the sex scenes are played mostly for laughs. But not in a shameful way, as Angie pointed out. It's just kind of more in that way where, like, when you're trying to be sexy, you just come off looking like a total joke, like that kind of laugh. So that's fun. But then also, there's so many great character actors in this, and I just need to say, Rob Lowe is so much fun in this movie.
Yes. He, at first, when you see him, you think, oh, he's just playing like
Chris Traeger.
From Cards. At first, it feels just like that. Like, you know, he's like kind of got like the same like manic, upbeat energy, but then he just turns into something so much weirder, and it's very silly and very stupid, but very entertaining.
It's like it's a character that on one level makes no sense, but I don't care because I so enjoyed it. And what it
I just want Rob Lowe to go around doing weird things all the time.
Oh, God bless him. Like, that's the thing. He's so weird in this movie, but he does it with that same kind of Chris Traeger lack of guile, and, like, he never winks at how ridiculous what he's doing is, so you just buy it, and you're just like, sure, this is what his house looks like. Sure, these are the fashion choices he has made, and I'm just gonna leave it at that, because I want you to see this and just enjoy what weirdness Rob Lowe has embraced for this movie. And, like, there's a lot of fun, weird little moments in the movie, and I really enjoyed it. Like, I would totally watch it again. I'm actually genuinely excited to see it once, like, you know, I'd go see it again. I had a really fun time.
How long is it?
Sure.
90, right?
Yeah, less than 100 minutes, I think.
That's how a comedy like this should be.
Yes, yeah. which is nice because we've all seen those really long Judd Apatow movies where the improv just has to keep going for 20 fucking minutes after it stopped being funny.
And Nicholas Stoller, who co-wrote this. So there was a risk of that. Like, I like the way Nicholas Stoller tells stories, but he tends to kind of take 20 minutes too long to tell them. And this one, it runs a little bit out of steam in the final act, but, I mean, not so much so that I was bored, just kind of that I was just kind of like, you could feel the energy drop a little bit. But, like, overall, really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't understand why it's getting such flack.
What was the reception in the theater when you guys saw it? Did
people
were people
laughing
out loud?
I mean, I was laughing the loudest, but that's not unusual.
I don't think that, I mean, it wasn't like the, you know, it wasn't like one of those movies where I was like, oh my God, the crowd was like fucking loving it. But, you know, people sounded like they were having a good time. Like, I've also been in screenings of comedies where it's just like every joke is landing with a thud and nobody's even like cracking a smile. It wasn't like that. People seemed to be enjoying it.
Well, then again, when we saw Blended, people were laughing.
Well, this wasn't an audience, though. There was no one, I think it was just press. I don't think there was, like, audience people there. So that's always a tougher crowd. I find critics don't laugh as loudly as, like, non-critic audiences.
Like, well, I think, you know, for it's we're pickier, and it's probably our job to be pickier.
And also, those people are probably handpicked in a way, you know. They're going after their target. I've been in ones where they're going after their target audience, and like, you know, like even Twilight. When we used to see Twilight when those movies were coming out, it was us in the middle, and then tons of screaming girls all around. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's how I saw all of them.
I don't know. Yeah. I was trying to figure out like why critics have been, why this movie's been getting such a bad rap, because I was genuinely like, you know, I hadn't read any of the reviews before I saw it, and I was genuinely surprised at like how bad some of the reviews were when I looked them up later, and I don't know. Like,
what are these bad reviews picking on?
The structure is a big problem. The fact that, you know, the cloud thing is kind of, it's not great storytelling, and it's kind of dumb. And if you understand how technology works, you can pretty quickly be like, hang on. But it's a comedy, so I don't care. Like, you know, it's not like it's Transcendence where the whole movie hangs together on this concept you have to buy. You know, like,
a lot of people also said that it wasn't funny, or that, you know, Jason Segel and Cameron Diaz didn't have good chemistry. I absolutely disagree with the latter. As for the not funny part, I mean, I'll admit, like, I've seen, like, these kinds of, like, raunchy comedies that are more, that have wilder, bigger moments, and that are funnier, and that go a little bit more extreme, and, like, are a little bit more, you know, I guess explicit with the sex. Like, you'll see hairy balls and shit, and it's not like that, but
You're seeing no hairy balls in this one.
Yeah, it's actually, like, it's actually for, you know, for the premise, it's not, it's maybe a little bit tamer than you'd expect, yeah. Which I guess maybe is a problem for some people. And I can see, like, if you're going in expecting, like, oh my god, this is going to be the craziest, wildest thing ever, it's not that. But that was about the only thing I could really, like, think of where I was like, okay, I guess that makes sense. Because the rest of it, I don't know, I thought it was really pleasant.
Yeah, pleasant. I mean, that's true, but I mean, like, it's much more of a romp than, like, a raunchy comedy. Like, there's raunch elements to it.
Yeah, so maybe the marketing is wrong. I don't know. I mean, overall, I think I've made it pretty clear, like, I really liked it. It's not like, oh my god, this is my favorite comedy of the year or anything, but I thought it was really entertaining. Christy?
Totally. I agree with that. Their marketing is a date movie. I think it's a great date movie.
It's a good really date fun. Movie, especially if you're in a long-term relationship, because I think there's a lot of things where you're just like, yeah, I know what I
get.
Yeah,
this.
I know about that. Yeah,
yeah, it's funny, and it's not a rom com. You know, it's more it's a sex comedy. It's just that it's not. I don't think it's as explicit as people might be thinking. Like, it's not like The Hangover explicit. It's not gratuitous. It's more. It's much more about the characters than it is about the sex itself. But the sex itself does get some pretty hilarious moments.
Yeah, so I think that's about it for Sex Tape. Christy, you want to lead us into The Congress, which is nothing like the Sex Tape?
Have fun explaining that one.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, so The Congress is out on VOD right now, and it's the follow-up from Ari Folman, who did Waltz with Bashir, and it's a live-action animated film whose concept is kind of hard to pin down, but I'm going to give it my best shot. So basically, Robin Wright, the actress from Princess Bride and Forrest Gump and many, many other movies that are not as well known, plays herself in it. And the first half of the movie is her being offered this new job where instead of ever performing ever again, she will sell her likeness and her celebrity and her identity as Robin Wright to a studio who will then scan her and through the use of computers, put her in any movie they want. It's basically like the technology that allows them to put Marilyn Monroe in
the Dior commercials with Charlize Theron. Yeah,
or like have Fred Astaire sweeping in vacuum cleaner commercials, all that kind of stuff. But it's like next level stuff. So she doesn't want to do it. There's a long discussion about why she doesn't want to do it, but ultimately she caves because her son has this very rare disease and she decides she's going to dedicate her life to taking care of him. And the money she would get from this would be very helpful. So then we leap to 20 years in the future, which is a large part of what you're seeing in the trailers where everything's animated and weird. And that's where the plot goes completely off the rails and becomes about this new age where people are taking chemicals so that they basically hallucinate all the time and don't have to deal with the reality around them, and they can be projected to be whoever they want. If you think Marilyn Monroe is the shit, you can look like Marilyn Monroe. If you want to be Aphrodite or Frank Sinatra or Jesus,
or a Picasso painting, which is one of my favorites.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I actually would totally be the mechanical man from Metropolis, because that's just badass. But
I wouldn't be anyone, because that's weird, and it's not real. They're cartoons.
Oh, man. Okay, so before we start, I really love this movie. I'm not going to pretend that I understood it all, because I don't, because it's a very surreal film, and I think it demands multiple rewatchings to really get what they're doing. But I liked what it starts to say about celebrity and about this idea of, you know, whether or not you like it when you're a celebrity, there's a certain amount of consent that is taken away, and your identity is taken on by all these other people that think they know you. And that was all really interesting. And then when it gets to the animation section, it's so strange and it's so twisted, and it fucks with your head. And I loved it. I didn't know walking into this movie what it was going to be, and I was just really blown away. I think it's beautiful, and it's fucked up, and it's crazy, and I'm so excited about it.
I was blown away by the first part, not so much the second. I love the idea of the first. Like, if your synopsis had stopped halfway through, that's, like, a brilliant idea for a movie. Because really, I mean, is that not the next step after motion capture technology? Why don't we just, you know, project one person and not make that person actually have to act themselves and just own the digital components?
Yeah, the first half was interesting because it's like something that you can imagine actually happening. Maybe not exactly like that, but you're like, I could see things headed in this direction in the not too distant future.
Totally. It feels like believable sci-fi.
Exactly. But then once we get to the cartoon parts, it's not so believable anymore. I mean, there's a lot of problems I found with that. First, it wasn't believable. I couldn't shake the fact that even though these are real people that are doing this to themselves, like putting themselves in that position, I couldn't wrap my head around why someone would do that. I mean, you're faking it. I mean, what's the difference really between that and like hallucinating on any drug right now?
Well, I think I kind of got the feeling that...
What do you get out of that?
I kind of got the feeling that in this future, not only do people do it because they like it, it also seemed like it was just kind of the social norm. Like, mm-hmm. Everyone's doing it, and so nobody really questions why it's weird. And people seem to change their identities as they feel. In that sense, I think you're supposed to, or at least I kind of saw it as, like, not being that different from someone, like, changing the way they dress, because it's still a way that you're, you know, people are always going to be interested in presenting themselves and, like, in projecting, and trying to project something that they want other people to see in themselves by, like, how they look. And so it just, to me, it just felt like a more extreme version of that. So I wasn't bothered by that. I do think it goes off the rails when it turns animated, but not necessarily in a bad way. I think that some of the themes get a little bit muddled, like, because in the beginning it's pretty clear what the themes are. Once we get to the animated stuff, it gets a little bit more confusing and a little bit more mixed up. It made me feel like I was on drugs, albeit, you know, of the kind we already have and not of the kind that makes me look like someone else. But I feel like as someone who watches a lot of movies, I have such an appreciation for when things feel really different, and I will give this movie credit for that. It feels very different from most things we've seen. And the other thing that I liked about it is, like, the whole premise feels a little bit like Charlie Kaufman-esque, and I love Charlie Kaufman, so I was immediately like, okay, I want to see where this is going.
You know, I think that one of the main reasons that I didn't buy into the cartoon part is because of the lack of transition. Because it really it does say just 20 years later and that's it. There's no, like, I get that, you know, maybe one technology kind of could have led to the other, but that was kind of just something I forced together in my own head. I didn't feel it. And also, when I saw the cartoon version of her, I had a hard time connecting it to the real person I had just met. And the way that those cartoons are designed, I guess I didn't think that they emoted enough. So I didn't feel for her. Like, when she meets that guy and he's like, I love you, I didn't really buy it.
That's interesting. I really love the cartoon animation of her because its likeness doesn't look especially like her, because it's not just supposed to be Robin Wright. It's supposed to be Robin Wright 20 years in the future, and we've only seen her for about 2 minutes in her future makeup. But what I liked about it is that I thought her voice work is so strong and so compelling that, like, you know, there's a scene where she basically has a freak out in the bathroom, and she's aware that everything she's seeing is things she's hallucinating, and the lights won't turn on, and it's because she doesn't want them to turn on, and it's a very disturbing moment, and I was very sucked into the peril of that, even though things get much worse for her. And I get what you're saying, where the people have very kind of placid faces in the animation. But what I thought was interesting is it's not just the faces that they have that are meant to emote. It's what's going on around them. It's like there's one part where she fantasizes that this man she's speaking to starts kind of turning into flowers. And that I just thought that was all. It's really kind of like Miyazaki meets Cool World to me is what that section looked like. And I I'd never seen anything quite like it, and I thought it was extraordinary.
It is very pretty, I'll give it that. I mean, yeah, their faces just didn't tell me anything, but everything around them, there was a lot to look at, which was nice. I mean, I'll appreciate what the movie was trying to do, but it just lost me at that point. I couldn't connect to anything, and that means I didn't care. And also the fact that it didn't make much sense what people were trying to do in that portion of the movie also. Like, I didn't really understand why this Congress was happening. I didn't quite understand, you know, what her goal was, because in the first portion of the movie, her goal was very clear, save her son. Mm-hmm. Then we totally lost that. But
yeah.
But then it kind of came back, but not really.
I mean, I liked it a lot more than Perry did, but I kind of had the same thing where, like, the first half of the movie, it's very clear, not just what's going on, but, like, you know, who she is, what her motivations are, like, you know, what the story's going to be about. And then you get to the second half, and suddenly it's like, you know, it's a story about, like, celebrity, and it's also about family, and it's also about romance, and it's also about the passage of time. And, like, it tries to do a lot, and I give it a lot of credit for that. It's very ambitious, but I don't know if it quite pulls it off. That said, I think it pulls it off well enough that, like, first of all, I admire him just for having the ambition to be like, yes, I'm going to tackle all of these things, because that is fucking bold. I think it does a good enough job that I was still compelled the whole time, and I actually really want to see it again, because I think that there's probably a lot of stuff that, like, some of the stuff that I wasn't so clear on might be cleared up by watching it again. Oh, and while we're talking about voice work, John Hamm is in this as, like, a guy. He's an animator who has been – so once she sold her likeness, a team of animators have been responsible for, you know, like, taking the likeness and turning them into movies. And John Hamm is an animator who has been on, like, the Robin Wright department of his studio, Miramount, that's what they call it, for 20 years. And he's, like, sort of fallen in love with her. And it's – That's really interesting. It's like a really weird, interesting love story that I don't think that they do enough with, but I want to just point out that John Hamm, I thought, did really good work in this. It's a very, very different role than he usually plays. Like, he plays this, like, kind of, like, you know, mild, not really mild-mannered, but he's a very different kind of guy than you see. Like, he's gentler, he's more thoughtful, he's more sensitive. I thought that was an interesting change of pace for him.
I think the acting in this is actually really astounding. Harvey Keitel plays her agent in this, and I think he has a really amazing scene. I'm curious what you two thought of Robin Wright's portrayal before we close up this section.
What do you mean, her portrayal? Like, her acting,
like,
in the movie?
Her as herself.
In I liked
movie
her.
Where people
her quite a bit in the beginning.
Garbage.
Oh, I love that. It was very being John Malkovich. Like, it's a movie about the experience of being a celebrity, played by a celebrity who is playing a celebrity. It's like, and I thought that it was, you know, it's kind of heartbreaking when you watch it, because these are people sitting around, like, pulling real facts from her career. Like, oh, you were that girl in Princess Bride, and we thought you were going to be bigger, and then you weren't. And, like, these are things that are true, and they're actually saying
cries.
It to her as a character. Yeah. She
like
is so astoundingly good in this, and I hope that this launches her into you know, more, better, bigger things.
Well, that crying scene is one of the best scenes in the entire movie.
It's amazing, and I know you're going to say, yeah, it's really great, and I get it. It seems that we all were interested in what was going on, though the effect on which it worked on us ranged greatly from Perry not digging it at all to Angie thinking it was pretty cool but kind of confusing to me being like, it's confusing, but I fucking love it.
Yeah,
I'm leaning more toward Christy than Perry, honestly.
Yeah, I'm not leaning towards either of you. I would say if you want to go see this movie, you could totally turn it off after 30 minutes, because I think that the first 30 minutes of this movie actually can play as a really nice little short film with a really cool idea. I want to see the Congress too, but, like, screw all that animated shit. I just want to see, like, that beginning part play out in full. I want to see what happens.
I think that, I mean, I agree that you could make a different, you could take the same first 40 minutes and make a different movie out of it, and I agree with that, but oh my god, you are missing out on some crazy, weird, ambitious, like, visually interesting shit if you turn it off after the first 30 minutes.
I really love this, and I recommend it. It's on VOD. I mean, you know, if you're thinking it's weird, you can take a break and walk away from it for a bit, but I think it's astounding. And I also want to throw out that I think a really good double feature for The Congress would be The Congress and Cold Souls, which also has Paul Giamatti, which we didn't have a chance to talk about, but he's in both movies. And in Cold Souls, Paul Giamatti plays himself and sells his soul because it burdens him. And I feel like they have very similar themes and senses of humor, and they're awesome.
I would like to
say Cold Souls was the first theatrical release I ever reviewed.
Wow.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did kind of like it. It's interesting.
The only
but like that goes to show how I'd react to something like this. Like that sure. felt very real to me what was happening.
That's
it's like an outrageous idea, but it's grounded and yeah. I love that.
The one last thing I want to say about the Congress is don't watch this while you're on drugs. You'll already feel like you're on drugs. It's confusing enough without your mind being addled. Just
yeah, this watch movie this is over. What I imagine bath salts is like.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the quote for that movie. We're doing well.
If there's nothing else to say then there this movie feels like what bath salts probably feels like. So
all right, so on to our final movie of the week, The Purge Anarchy, the sequel to The Purge. And if you have not seen The Purge, what it's about is it's a government that says in order to cleanse yourself or to release the beast, as they say, we are going to have one night a year from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., a 12-hour period where all crime is legal. You can kill people, you can steal shit, do whatever you want. So that's the basic premise, and this installment focuses on a guy played by Frank Grillo. His name, I believe, is Leo, and he decides that he's upset about something, so he wants to go out and purge, but not, like, go crazy purge. Like, he has a reason he wants to purge.
I think you can say that. Yeah. That's, like, the first 5 minutes.
I guess. Yeah. All right. I'll say that. So revenge. He wants revenge. He goes out onto the street and stops laughing at me. And he goes
you were like, revenge. Revenge.
Let's make that a gif. he goes out onto the street ready to, like, kill his target, and he comes across these two women that are kind of being forced out onto the street against their will. And then he also runs into another two people who get stuck outside after the siren goes off and the purge begins against their will. So it's like he went outside purposely to purge, and they're kind of there by someone else's doing. So he sees them all helpless, and he decides, okay, I'm going to save them. And he does, and then they tag
Except
along.
He doesn't bring Grillo away, so it's like,
oh,
funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way Perry said it made it sound so cute. Like, it was like Perry being like, oh, it's an injured bird. Nurse it back to health. But it's not like that. He's, like, very reluctant.
You know, well, you
fine.
Know.
He's a tough
guy. He's, like, fine, but that is kind of what he is like. Because, like, they're all so freaking helpless. Oh, so I almost
but it's not, like, it's not like a sweet, like, come with me if you want to live. It's like, let's go. Let's
yeah.
And then the purge ends and, like, they walk off into the sunrise together.
Spoilers.
Spoiler.
Yes, everyone gets ice cream at the end of this movie. They all high five. No, that is not what happens.
I want to see that in the next purge. But anyway, the whole thing is about Frank Grillo's character and these four other characters trying to survive the night together, and he's kind of their protector, and they're just, like, tagging along the whole time. And it's fun because The Purge is a brilliant freaking idea for a movie. It's crazy.
Okay, but Harry,
I think this idea is so freaking franchise worthy, I can't believe it.
No,
I don't think that The Purge or The Purge Anarchy use it as well as it should be used. I think that there's a lot more potential that they are not tapping into whatsoever, but it's still fun to watch, and because it's fun to watch, that makes me want to see more of them.
No,
I think
totally. That The Purge Anarchy does a way, way, way better job than The Purge did of taking full advantage of the premise. Because, you know, The Purge kind of, like, it starts out with, like, oh, this is a crazy dystopian world we found ourselves in. Oh, it's a standard home invasion thriller, and, that's not the only problem with that movie, but it basically turned into something way less interesting. Whereas this one, I think, did such a better job of, like, exploring, like, you know, like, what kind of society this is, like, what kind of people live in this society, what kind of motivations these people have for participating in the purge, you know, like, what happened to the victims, like, how the victims feel about it, like, why someone might have a legitimate reason to go on purge. Like, I thought that this movie did a much, much better job. I'm not saying that they couldn't do an even better job, like, you know,
the
in theory.
The world building in this is way better.
Yeah, I think that especially compared to the last one, it was leaps and bounds better. But I do have a bone to pick with you, Perry, which is that you talk about the premise for this one like it makes sense. It doesn't make any more sense.
No, I'm talking about, like, the idea of the purge. Like,
no, the idea of the purge makes no fucking sense to me. Well, that is just, like, logistically, that would just, like, for logistical reasons, that would never happen.
If you get past that, for a horror movie franchise, it's perfect.
But I'm saying, I feel like with...
Don't make sense. Come on.
Well, no, I feel like with both the Congress and this, it still worked for me because it made emotional sense.
Did you just compare the Purge Anarchy to the Congress? Because I think you're the only person in the world that's going to do that.
Well, I just feel like it's just because in the last one you were talking about how it didn't make sense to you, but it made emotional sense to me. And in this one, it's the same thing where it made emotional sense. And I thought that was really this movie's strength, was that he did such a better job of making emotional sense out of this premise. Whereas the last one,
more crazy bastards, yeah.
Yeah, the last one is just like, oh, I don't know. Some people are just assholes and they just like to kill people one night a year. This one actually, like, kind of, you get a much better understanding of why they would do that.
No, totally. That was what I like so much about this one is, like Angie said, like, for once we were actually shown why people, like, a reason you could understand why people would purge, and I'm not saying you agree with, but, like, people would state why they were purging. And it was a really interesting theme because it's, again and again, you had people who were basically saying, like, I have a right to violence. And that's not, I'm paraphrasing, but they would say, this is my right. And then they would attack someone.
It boils down to entitlement a lot of the times, and, like, you know, that's something that, like, so, like, all the best horror movies are the ones that kind of take fears that you already have and kind of, like, you know, make them big, and I feel like this one kind of did that. I don't know. I'm talking about it like it's a masterpiece. It's not a fucking masterpiece. It's, like, not even subtle at all or anything like that, but
it's just one-dimensional and straightforward.
Yeah, but I
did have a good time. I mean, I think the tension works really well. I was way more interested in the ensemble characters than I was last time. Even though the couple that gets trapped out, they're kind of weak. But the mother and daughter is really interesting.
They were great. I thought that the two people who played the mother and daughter, I don't know their names, unfortunately. Yeah, I thought they were great, and I kind of believe that they were scared all the time. Totally. I mean, the other two that you mentioned, what's his name? Matt Saracen.
Matt Saracen.
Zach Guilford and what's her face?
Keila Sanchez. Well, I don't know if that's how you say her name. But fun fact, they're married in real life.
So interesting.
That is interesting. They were fine in it. It's just that, like, their characters didn't get as much depth as, like, the mother-daughter characters, and they didn't get as much to do. They're fine. But, like, at least I understood their characters more than we did in the first movie, and, like, you got
and they weren't
why they
stupid.
Were...
Like, in the first except, movie, except... do you know that nothing in the first movie would have happened if those stupid kids would have just, like, not made the dumbest decisions on Purge Night imaginable?
No,
yeah,
totally.
Like, in the Purge Anarchy, the characters do a few... They goof up a few times, but in ways where you're like, yeah, I guess that, like, that would happen. Like,
yeah, except that the couple I hold things against, because basically, like, they're trying to get out of Los Angeles to a place where I guess they don't purge. That was kind of unclear. I guess there are some areas in the States.
No, I don't think that that's what it
are
is.
They just,
I think,
like,
they were
trying
just
to go home
to a lockdown.
Yeah, I think they were just trying to go get, like, away from downtown, which is, like, where all the purgers would be. They just wanted to go somewhere that was relatively,
like,
more safe.
They're like, oh, we have 4 hours left, and I said to Angie, I was like, okay, let's say the purge is real. I'm going to Canada.
I love playing this game.
A week. I don't want, like, because, like, you figure there's going to be a clusterfuck getting out of New York when the purge is coming.
No, you
New York
know
it's a madhouse.
You go to Canada.
No,
that's
what
she said,
yeah.
Come on.
That's what I'm saying. I would get out of
Canada. Oh, go completely out of the States.
Well, yeah, I would go to Canada, but I would go, like, several days ahead of time, not like, well, we got 4 hours, that'll be fine, because it's just... Like, I mean, it's hard to get out of New York on time ever because the MTA is garbage and Amtrak's paying.
Yeah, if you've ever tried to go to, like, Long Island for the weekend and you leave on, like, Friday after work.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, yeah, I wouldn't be taking risk with the purge coming to New York. I would get that. I'd be, like, booking my ticket for, like, 4 days ahead of time, and I wouldn't
Although
come back.
Although I do bet
after.
You, eventually, if this franchise continues, the purge will go global.
I would not be surprised. They all the franchises go global at some point.
I have so many ideas for new Purge movies.
I'd like to keep it in America because I think it's a really interesting American theme. Do you know in other countries it's called American Nightmare?
Really?
Yeah,
look at
that. Posters. I was looking for a poster and I thought this one's great and it was for another country
God,
and it's
is
American
that what
Nightmare.
They think of us?
I mean, that's what it is.
He's American, right? So an American made this movie, so it's apparently it's what we think of ourselves, but that's still sad.
There's themes about guns and people's feelings of rights to them and people's feelings of their rights to their religion over other people's. Like, there's one part where a mentally insane woman is just firing blindly and talking about it.
There's a lot of what it boils down to for a lot of these characters, like you kind of touched upon earlier, is like a lot of them feel like it's my right to do this, it's my right to do the things. And you're right, that's very American.
Like, I am entitled to these things.
Like, I'm an American. I'm entitled to have this. I'm entitled to have that. No, you're right. I do think that, like, so thematically, I thought it was strong, if a little bit, like, not at all subtle. Like, people will literally just come out and say, I'm entitled to this, and, you know, because the movie.
This is my right. They say that a lot.
But my bigger problem with it, I mean, I liked it overall, but I thought that the scares could use some work. He really relies
very heavily. It wasn't really a scary movie. This was an action thriller.
Yeah.
But, like, even then, like, there's a lot of, like, jump scares, which are just, like, ugh, they're so tiring. There's more of what they did in the last film where, like, anytime someone's about to, like, get killed, like, oh, that person gets shot. So I thought, like, that kind of stuff could use a little bit more work and was not super strong. Before we wrap, I do have to say, Frank Grillo, so hot. I'm sorry.
He is my new favorite person.
He's so good in this.
I was going to make you like him even more.
Throughout the movie. No matter what is happening on screen, you just hear Angie go, Frank Grillo is so hot.
Well, he was.
Well, not only is he really hot, he's a good actor, because, like, he brought a lot more to this character than what was in the script to begin with.
That's absolutely true.
He is so freaking nice. Like, people get so many more points in my book when I get to meet them and talk to them, and they're, like, just the nicest person ever, and he's easily one of my favorite interviews of this year.
I think he's going to blow up from this. Like, he's been having some good, like, bit meaty roles, but, like, this show's, like, he could have his own, like, gritty action movie.
Yeah, well, like, he was really...
He's going to star in The Raid.
Yeah, he was really good in Captain America, but it was such, like, a movie with so many things going on that I think he kind of got lost. Like, when he was on screen, I'd be like, this guy's awesome, and then, like, you know, Hydra would happen, and I'd be like, what? Who's that guy again? Never mind, I forgot about him.
But I want to see more Frank Grillo vigilante justice. Like, I mean, you know, whether that means continuing to work with this director.
He's got his own TV show coming out on DirecTV, too, in the fall.
What is that?
Kingdom. I think it's about boxing or MMA. It's MMA.
Oh, right. I think he's, like, actually a trained martial artist or something. Yeah. So, overall, The Purge. I know it has not been getting great reviews, but I think if you liked the first one, or even if you thought this is pretty good but it could do better, or, like, even if you thought it's a good idea but it could do better, then you should watch this one.
I would definitely say the same thing.
Yeah, I thought the first one was an interesting idea, but I was pretty bored with it. This one, I think, is genuinely really fun. I think if you're looking for something thrilling this weekend, The Purge Anarchy is great.
I say go see it. I love The Purge. I hope it does well, because I want more Purges. One day, I should devote an entire one of these episodes, and I should make you two sit here and listen to me, like, rattle off my incredible list of Purge sequel ideas.
I thought you were going to be like, what would you do with The Purge for real? I don't know if I'm ready for this.
You know what's crazy is the first time I ever saw The Purge, like, before anyone else had, it was a promo screening that I covered. I was the first one to kind of, like, ever go and ask people, so what would your Purge plans be? And, like, I walked around and I did, like, this little piece, and then I think we posted it on Screen Rant, and at first it was, like, a lot of really smart things, like, why would you kill someone when you could rob a bank? Or, like, you know, stuff like that. And then all of a sudden it started to get, like, really crazy specific, and that was the end of the comment section. Never again.
Oh, my.
The Purge.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
I don't think internet commenters need, like, more of a reason to threaten to kill each other. Or, like, you.
I want to throw out, a friend of mine asked me if all crime is legal, so people could rob, like, the Met. And I said, yeah. And he said, oh. And I said, so would you rob the Met? And he said, no, that art's for everyone. I would try to defend it. But he is a very thin man who could not defend much. And I said, I would totally watch your Purge movie, but it'd be really short. He said, yeah, it'd be me hitting someone with a baseball bat in front of the Met and then just getting shot in the face.
Yeah, your friend is not... no, sorry.
Adam's awesome, but he would not withstand Purge night.
Nope.
I'd go rob an Apple store. That'd actually be a fun movie, like robbing the Fifth Avenue Apple Store.
But then you'd have to get home without getting raped or murdered repeatedly.
And you know you would not be the only person with that idea, so the Apple Store is going to be crawling with people.
It would be as crowded as it is every hour of every day.
But seriously, The Purge 3 set in an Apple Store. It's like The Hunger Games, but in an Apple Store.
There is surprisingly little, like theft and property damage in
The Purge.
I think
there's probably a fair amount of that, but it's like, well, no, there's all this murder going on. Who wants to see someone robbing the Gap?
You know, I asked the director, James DeMonaco, about that, because I said, we were talking about, like, the rules of it, and I asked, you know, if your neighbor stole your car on Purge night, and then the next day rolled around, and your car is just sitting in somebody else's driveway, do you have the right to take that car back? Because, like, isn't it still in your name? He didn't have an answer, but, like, we had fun trying to figure out all these rules and how exactly it might. All right, so The Purge is getting out of control. We are done for this week. We are out of time. You can find us everywhere if you like our show. We are on iTunes. First and foremost, go on iTunes, Popcorn Prosecco, rate us, comment, like it, all that good
Subscribe.
Stuff. We are on YouTube. Popcorn Prosecco. We are on Twitter. Our handle is Popcorn Prosecco, and we are also online, popcornprosecco.com. Check that out, and then all three of us are on the internet as well. Angie, you want to take it first?
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for /film.com.
Christy?
I'm Christy Puchko. I'm at Christy Puchko on Twitter, KristyPuchko, and I write for Cinema Blend and a bunch of other sites, but you can keep up with me at decadentcriminals.com, my personal blog.
And you can catch me on Twitter. My handle is pnemeroff, and no more all over the place. JustCollider.com from now on.
Woo!
Thank you, guys. And thank you all for watching. We will see you next week.
Siri, how do you perform CPR on a dog?